Hi, this is Helen, and thank you for joining me for a cup of teal. Teal is shorthand for the future of work. It means bringing your whole self to work, a focus on purpose and self-management. And this podcast is a chat over a cup of tea with the people who are making this happen in health, care, and public services. Stories of self-management in action. I've known Mary Beth for over 10 years. We work together in the learning community for person-centred practices. We are co-authors of a book together. So I was delighted when 2 years ago she agreed to step up and lead HSA in the US. So now she's also taking the journey with her team towards self-management. And in this podcast, we talk about the power of values, decision-making and clarity over roles. I hope you enjoy it.
So I am in a very exciting role. As you know, we've been collaborating for a very long time. And 2 years ago, I stepped into the role of lead or CEO for Helen Sanderson Associates in the USA. And we are a remote team. We have 8 associates across the US. So that in itself has been very interesting, and we'll get into that in a bit. In addition to that, for the last 15 years, I've been working as the Assistant Director of Training and Organizational Development at Tri-Counties Regional Center in California. And in that organization, we provide case management support, person and family-centered services for about 15,000 people in the Central Coast of California.
Wonderful. Now, of course, HSA in the UK's journey to self-management started about 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And at that time, we were still connected through the international team with Canada, yourself, New Zealand, and Australia. So what made you decide to move towards self-management as a team in the US, Mary Beth?
It's really been the culmination of many different experiences, and I think sparked by curiosity of what you were trying in the UK, and even more recently, seeing some of the successes and challenges you were having with well-being teams. Mm-hmm. But even prior to that, I've been a student of Ken Wilber's integral theory and spiral dynamics for most of my adult life. And I've used the integral theory as the organizational development framework within Tri-Counties Regional Center. So all the work there, building internal capacity, training, organizational development, leadership development, has really been centered around integral theory, which is part of the foundation of self-managing, you know, practices. So with that, I use that framework as a guide within our organization, both with coworkers, as well as people we support in the community. And then, you know, that journey led to, I think, some of the work that we collaborated on around person-centered teams, which felt at the time, and still does, like a really useful application of sort of blending person-centered values and integral theory, creating sort of a practical framework of how organizations can work in a support setting. And then, in the last 5 years, when I was reading Frederick Laloux's Reinventing Organizations. And what really hooked me was seeing the practical application of the Reinventing Organizations map that has been developed. And then reading Reinventing Scale-Ups by Trent Marsh, Susan Basterfield, and Brent Lowe. All of those gave a very practical feel to a very abstract way of thinking. And for me, that was essential, to have that practical pieces. So that's really when I got curious and excited.
And thinking about it, Mary Beth, the work that you and I collaborated on with person-centered teams, building on the work that some of my colleagues had done as well, particularly Michelle Livesley, I think that was part of what gave me the courage to believe we could do this, because it felt like the next level up, the next level on of the person-centered teamwork, particularly the bringing the whole self to work and being really clear about decision-making. So yes. How did that land for you?
Exactly the same way. So what's been most exciting about our journey as our HSA team, bringing our whole selves to work, we really started working our work together by exploring our values and our purpose. And we spent quite a lot of time getting to know one another and who we are. We used values-based recruitment to, you know, build our USA team. And if you asked each of our team members, I think the one thing we have in common is how amazing it felt to, or how quickly our group created a bond and the trust that is needed in any team, particularly a remote team, you know, virtual team. So that bringing your whole self to work, I think, is an essential piece of any high-performing team. And having seen that it works through the person-centered teamwork that we had done earlier, that too gave me the confidence to move forward and build this remote team. And that, coupled with, you know, the other pivotal point in our startup work together at HSA USA, has really evolved around the decision-making practices. You know, we've been exploring and putting into practice the advice process. We've been working on redefining our roles and matching roles with personal strengths. And we're now working on some of the holacracy practices around decision making. And all of those things have been so powerful and so helpful to move us from enjoying our time together to being really productive together.
So, Mary Beth, the communities that you serve, the people and services who are dedicated to support people with learning disabilities in the US, what connection do you see between the work that you've been doing as a trainer in person-centered practices and the evolution of person-centered teams and self-management? Do they need each other? Are they connected? How do you see it?
I think there's an incredible opportunity and need here in the US, you know, similar to the UK. Our direct support profession is experiencing all of the challenges that you've mentioned in some of your work, including the, you know, the wages, the time and task approach to compensating people. The fact that a direct support professional is not really, doesn't feel valued or heard or appreciated. So when you hear those kinds of concerns, and we know how effective and how helpful some of the person-centered teams approaches can be, yes, there's absolutely a need and a place for introducing this into the direct support profession. And I think that, coupled with, you know, as you mentioned it, this, the work around self-managing teams, you know, the reinventing organizations, TEAL organizations, it really does feel like a next evolutionary step, particularly when you add in the piece around decision making. If we can give not just supervisors anymore, it used to be we relied on supervisors to make all the teams work, but if we can infuse some of these practices and you know, bringing our whole selves to work, building the trust, creating principles and values that guide decision-making, empowering people with the opportunity and ability to make decisions as close to the person supported as possible. I think if all of those things can be embedded into a team to really shift the culture of direct support work, then we'll experience greater retention, we'll experience greater satisfaction, and all of those things can only lead to people who are in a direct support role performing their own responsibilities and duties to people in the community in a much more personal way. So I think there really is a great, it gives us a real chance to truly personalize supports if we can find ways to embed this.
And you and I used to say on our training courses that in order for colleagues to be person-centered with the people they support, their experience of management needed to be person-centered as well. So the whole thrust of person-centered teamwork and person-centered leadership felt really important to me then and still does. But sort of a decade ago, Mary Beth, we were doing two-day training courses on a range of person-centered thinking skills and tools. I think it's taken me quite a while to realize that they're not all built equally and that some of them feel much more significant in the power shifts that we're trying to make here. And talking to colleagues, certainly in this country, there feels to be two ends of the spectrum here. Some people who say, now you're a person-centered, now you're a person-centered team, now you're a self-managing team, self-manage and decide how you want to work. And then on the other side of the spectrum, there's the very prescriptive, you could say, style of self-management in holacracy, or people having a range of tools and approaches. So where are you on that spectrum? Make it up yourself, or here's some tried and true things to go forward with.
I think we're right in the middle. I think we are trying to use those tried and true methods so that we can make it up ourselves, if that makes sense.
Yes.
I guess one of the exciting things about our team, and also at the same time, one of the challenges is we've read a lot. We've had great opportunity to work with Jackie Lefebvre and with Susan Basterfield. And even with their insight and their guidance, we're still trying to figure this out as we go. We are learning, we're building this plane as we're flying. So in that regard, I feel like we need to be able to morph or modify the tried and true sort of regimented practices to fit the culture and what is important to our teams and to fit our strengths and our, you know, areas for continued growth.
So what are you finding? What's some of the early learning around the practices that feel the most powerful to you?
Well, the most powerful, like when I reflect on really the pivotal turning points of growth or points of growth in our team, one would be the values, really, really understanding why it's so important to start with values and developing our shared purpose statement. And when we spent a lot of time looking at, you know, thinking of values, and unlike some experiences I've had in other places, where, you know, in 15 minutes you identify what the corporate values are and then we put them up on the wall, and then perhaps don't use them very often. We really took a great deal of time to define what our values meant for us as a team, what it would look like in practice, and make them our own. And we've continued to use those values whenever we're in conversation about a new offering or a new program or, you know, a new piece of work. Or if we're, you know, if we're in conflict or if there's some tensions rising, we'll bring our values into that conversation to help guide us forward. That's been enormous. Okay, so another practice that we've been intentional about, as I mentioned, is the decision, identifying roles and decision making. So a huge turning point when we, you know, as a startup organization, I'm the team lead, I'm sort of the source, the person who is providing suggested vision for the organization. It really took us the whole first year to get to know each other and sort of define how we wanted to be together, how we wanted to work together. And when we came together for the very first time face-to-face in October of last year, of 2018, we went through the work of roles. We identified, this is who we want to be, this is what we want to put into the world, what roles are needed. So defining the roles, and not defining job descriptions, but defining the roles that are essential for our own success and growth, at least in a year's time. And then matching people's strengths to those roles. That was incredible. That just opened up so much for us. And all of a sudden, individual team members, I think, who were holding back because they assumed that I needed to give, you know, as the leader, needed to grant permission, or, you know, they needed to check things with me. But as soon as we created that platform, things just really started to happen. And people were contributing in just a wonderful, wonderful ways. And it was just beautiful to see. So that has been a critical process. And then the decision-making, we are practicing, you know, having circles and the advice process and sort of our criteria for decision-making and the holacracy. So in our governance, in our team meetings, when we have tensions that are raised, and I guess this is one area where perhaps the scripted tried and true method has been helpful, at least while we're getting used to it. The first thing we needed to do was help people understand what is a tension. Mm-hmm. I think before we understood or before we knew what holacracy was about, tension meant, well, somebody's in conflict, or people would raise tensions and use that as a time just to complain about how things that are not going well. Mm-hmm. So when we reframed tensions as, you know, this tension is just, you know, sort of a gap of where someone sees we currently are and where we could be, and suggests a proposal of how to get us to the place we want to be. That has been transformational in making, helping us make better use of our time. We're still getting used to that, trying that on, but that has helped us be far more productive and move forward more quickly in a very, very inclusive, respectful manner.
Mary Beth, that's so interesting, isn't it? Because you and I have done such a lot of work around positive and productive meetings. And I felt so proud of that. You know, I would have said we had some of the best meetings, and particularly when on Facebook and LinkedIn, you see all these memes about dreadful, dreadful meetings, and ours weren't like this. So it was surprising to me to learn about tensions and addressing tensions in meetings, and to find that even more powerful than what we've been previously using. So we, as you are, I think, doing, brought together some of what we've done around positive productive meetings, the check-ins, the appreciation round. We're now doing moments of mindfulness as well. But the power of the tactical approach to tensions is really, really quite incredible, isn't it?
It is. And in fact, in this coming year, in 2020, I'm really hoping to do some updating of the positive and productive meetings, you know, framework and practices to incorporate more of that intentionality around discussing tensions and decision making.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So clarity about values and operationalizing your values and intentionally using them in decision making, and then clarity of roles and decision making sound like they've been the most significant steps. And I must admit, like you, learning about values in a different degree of depth from Jackie, and then seeing it as one of the four components of Brené Brown's work in her Daring Leadership work, it's so powerful. It's absolutely everything, actually, isn't it? Being true to mm-hmm. your values and how you live them.
Yes, yes. I remember when we were on a call with Jackie, she joined one of our team meetings, and we had gone through the Manescence values framework with her. And when she started talking about what she was hearing from us, and when we first, and I imagine this is a pretty common way that people go about the values, when we got the results of our group values back, we assumed, okay, well, these must be our value words, and aren't they wonderful? And we were very excited about them. But they still felt, you know, pretty stale. They didn't have our personality mm-hmm. attached to them. So in talking with Jackie, when she just started talking with us about what she saw and what she was hearing from us, and she helped us recognize that we just needed to make these values our own in our own words, so that we could really live them and not feel like we had to take someone else's definition of a value. Mm-hmm. So that's where we really invested time. And we just, you know, people first started to try to do a couple of drafts of value statements, and that wasn't working for us. So we said, forget this. Let's just sit down and let's just talk. What does it look like? What does it feel like when these things are happening? And we recorded that conversation. And from there, the words just started to flow, you know, the definitions of who we are in, you know, in the lens of our values.
Oh, it makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up, because this, although, again, the previous work we've done over the past decade, you know, we would typically use the values of the organization and talk about where they were happening in practice. But this feels a completely different way around of thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. It really does. It really did feel different and really felt great. I guess looking back now, I can't imagine achieving the progress that we have in the first year or identifying some of the work products that we have if we had not done that work first, mm-hmm. especially as a remote team where we're not face to face and we meet very infrequently. The power of those values really need to guide us individually as we're doing our work.
So we've spent a little time looking back. If we now look forward. So let's imagine that your team is invited to support an organization that wants to deliver the most person-centered supports possible to people. Given what you know now, where would you be encouraging people to start? What would you suggest people consider?
Well, a few things, and perhaps before I get there, let me just share one more thing that we're right in the middle of, because I think this is a piece that I would really recommend people use to start. So we just had our second annual meeting in October. We're just coming off of that. And we adopted the peer feedback process that we learned about through in Holacracy and in Reinventing Organizations. It was an amazing experience. So giving feedback is also one of those things that comes with all kinds of angst in many teams and organizations. So we set up the process of each of us coming to that team meeting with a self-reflection on what we were pleased about in our past year, the contributions we felt we made, areas for our own continued growth. And we shared that with each team member. And then each team member gave every other team member feedback face-to-face, responding to two questions. What is one area that I most value about working with you individually? And then what is one area where I see you could continue to grow or develop? And we had a conversation with our team. Did we just want to do that in private, or did we want the entire team to experience the whole process? And they wanted to do it all openly and together. So we spent time providing peer feedback to each other. And that was very validating, very powerful. It helped bring the team even more closely together. And then from that process, now we are in the period where we're reflecting on the feedback we received, and we are getting ready. And during that team retreat, we also identified our priorities for the upcoming year. So we are getting ready to develop the colleague letters of understanding for each of our roles, and that will outline our personal commitments in 2020. And that practice, I feel, is going to be another breakthrough point for our journey in how we work together and how we get things done. So, back to your question of where would I help people start, I think one thing I have learned in this journey is it feels like this implementing these practices, approaches, is much easier, I think, in a startup team. Mm-hmm. Than it might be in an existing team where you need to relearn or unlearn practices in order to learn some new ways of working together. If there is an organizing team for a startup, I would, if I had to do it over again, I would have tried to have put some of the frameworks, some of the defining, foundational pieces of a startup organization, the purpose definition, how some of the expectations, some of the deliverables, try to have at least a skeleton of that before going into the values work. Because what I found, we're fortunate, we have a team of people who are really dedicated and committed to figuring this out together. Mm-hmm. So for us, it's been working, but it has been taking a long time. I think it took the whole first year for us really to get to know each other and find a level of safety with one another where we could do our best work. And now, starting in year two, we are feeling very, very productive as we're starting off this new year. I can imagine if some organizations get very excited about the values work and values-based recruitment and do a good job with that, and as a result, bring on really good people, if some of those other foundational pieces are not yet in place, there's a risk that they'll not be able to retain people because the organization may or may not yet be living their purpose and their values through their daily work. So that's a tricky one for me. How much of that, and I guess that's a question I'm still figuring out, is how much of that foundational work needs to be done ahead of time or by a smaller circle so that you can recruit good people into a team versus you know, as I mentioned earlier, building the plane as we fly, that has been challenging.
I think you're right. I think clarity about what are we here to do, our why, if you use Simon Sinek's perspective, but what's this for and who's it for, would be language that we've used with Seth Godin and the Alt MBA. So getting clarity around those kinds of boundaries and the values that underpin that, and then exploring value-based recruitment and taking that further. And an organization was asking me about this only last week, and they said, well, what if we just, you know, introduce value-based recruitment and got some great people? But if you do that and then you've got managers working in old ways, the amount of cynicism you would generate so quickly by doing that, and then absolutely having people leave. So that's a challenge, isn't it?
Yes. And I think one way to start with that, you know, starting to embed these practices in an existing organization really does continue on some of the work we've been doing for a long time. Mm. So I continue to work with organizations around positive productive meetings, and now infusing that more with some of the decision-making processes. Mm-hmm. If teams can become more comfortable with decision-making as a vehicle for building trust, as a vehicle for being more productive, then that feels like a really important place to start. It almost feels like a bridge between some of the older or more traditional practices we see in organizations and some of the self-managing practices.
Yes. Rock roles and decision-making to take this forward based on values. But Mary Beth, something else we share is, if you're familiar with Myers-Briggs, we're both INTJs. And therefore, there's a certain amount of creativity and control and forward thinking that's part of our nature. What's it been like moving from a CEO and founder space, as I have as well, to this very, very different way of working?
Oh, wow. It has been... It's been liberating and frustrating at the same time.
That's exactly what I'd say.
So it's been very liberating in that when I, you know, particularly when after defining roles and with people and having people just start to flourish, you know, as an INTJ, I take great joy in seeing others reach or achieve or move toward their own potential and their own personal journey. So that brought me great joy. And that was very liberating because it's, oh my goodness, this is wonderful. I don't have to do everything. So that part has been wonderful, exceeding my hopes and expectations. The challenging part is as a leader, and I've always been a very effective leader. I don't want to say strong leader because I'm not a dominant force, although people describe me as being an influencer. Mm-hmm. So in that way, it's been very hard for me to know how far to step in or how far to move to step back. And what are the decisions that as a team we figure this out together to define who we are and how we're going to be as an organization, versus what are the decisions that as the team founder, I guess, mm-hmm. I really need to make and deliver as a suggestion to the team. So that's been difficult. And the feedback that I received from my colleagues at our recent team meeting, it was really interesting because, you know, half of them asked me to step in more because they wanted more direction, really linking back to what most of us are used to in traditional leadership roles. And then others said, well, step back more. So I'm still sort of in a quandary of what my role as leader is. And I'm the other role that I have taken on in our group is, what's sometimes referred to as the source or someone who really provides that vision of where the organization might go. So that's been the hardest thing for me. And quite honestly, it continues to be, a place that I just really need to reflect on as we do so well as introverts.
And that mirrors my experience completely. And as you know, for the first 2 years of HSA in the UK's
move towards self-management, I know that I step back too far. And in wellbeing teams, I am exploring that as well, because we're at the end of our first 2 years. And again, we're transitioning from me having significant role for operations to supporting Mary into that role, and had a really interesting experience over the last couple of days where Mary made a decision that's different to the one that I would have made, and it's entirely appropriate within her role for her to make that and for me not to influence it. But it was a real sitting back moment for me, and part of me was going, this is brilliant, this is self-management in action, and the other part of me was going, oh, this feels different. So I really do empathize with that continued journey for both of us.
Yes. You know, and the other thing that brings up for me, you know, particularly with HSA USA, and you know, when you think about integral leadership, you know, by Ken Wilber and Frederick Laloux's work, and you know, Otto Scharmer, Theory U, you know, sensing is such an important part of the work we do, and sensing what needs to end and what wants to emerge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm working hard to incorporate that approach in my work. I know that I'm very tied to the history that HSA has had, mm-hmm. and the history that we have shared and others. And in a space of really needing to remind myself what pieces of that need to continue and what needs to stop, and what is wanting to emerge here in the US with mm-hmm. this team of very, very talented people that is new and different. So, yeah, well, so it's a really interesting space to be in.
That sounds like an exciting place to finish. And I personally, with my history of HSA, look forward to seeing where you take this and learning from you. So Mary Beth, can we connect again, particularly after you've explored colleague letters of understanding? Because that's such an exciting practice. And I'm really curious about what that looks like and feels like for you and your colleagues.
I would love to. I'm excited to find out what that's going to be like as well.
Brilliant. So thank you so much for joining me. Look forward to connecting with you for the next part of your journey. And thank you again.
Thank you, Helen.
Thank you for listening. I'd love to hear your reflections. Please tweet me. I'm at Helen@WBTeams. This podcast is a companion to Open Teams. On this podcast, we share the voices and stories of pioneering organizations in health, care, and public services. And on Open Teams, you can see the documents that they're using. Have a look at openteams.co.uk. And if you're interested in wellbeing teams, please come and find me on LinkedIn, where I share a weekly 2-minute film, or my blog site, helensanderson.net. And finally, if you're interested in self-management and need some support along the way, I'd love to hear from you. I'm at helen@wellbeingteams.org. Thank you.